This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Travis Weber with us on the program. Travis is director of the Center for Religious Liberty at the Family Research Council, where he focuses on legal and policy issues pertaining to religious freedom. Travis is with us today to talk about the findings of an important new poll that was just released by the Family Research Council, dealing with the growing threat to citizens who hold to a biblical view of marriage as being only the union of one man and one woman. We'll also be talking about what Christians can do to stand against attacks to their religious liberties. Travis, welcome back to the program. It's great to have you with us again on Family Policy Matters.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate you and appreciate the Family Research Council so much and the partnership that we have on working on a wide range of issues. Tell us, Travis, if you would, about the new poll that FRC released on February the 24th at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. What was the purpose of the poll?
Yeah, so the purpose was to determine how people feel about several different issues the country is facing right now, several around marriage. We wanted to see, what Americans thought of marriage in terms of marriage between a man and a woman and breaking that down by different ages and demographics. And then we also wanted to see what they thought about who gets to decide that question. Even if you think that marriage should be between a man and a woman, people may have different views in terms of, well, the Supreme Court gets to decide that for everyone, or states get to decide it. And then we also wanted to look at how people view dissenters who are being forced to violate their conscience when it comes to marriage. These wedding vendor cases where people don't want to be supporting part of the celebration of same-sex marriage, and that's causing hostility to be directed at them, and they're engaged in legal proceedings now. So we wanted to get a sense of how Americans basically felt about these three different areas.
Well, Travis, what did you find from the big picture perspective about the public's perception or view of marriage and how it should be defined?
Overall, people are still, in general, in support of marriage being defined between a man and a woman. 53% Americans agree that marriage should be defined only as a union between one man and one woman. This number does vary, somewhat based on racial demographics and sex and church attendance, as we expected. A significantly higher percentage of Americans, 61%, however, think that the Supreme Court should not be deciding this question for the country.
Well, Travis, I know that one of the questions also that the poll deals with is whether Americans should be free to operate their daily lives, including their businesses, according to their religious beliefs. What did the poll find regarding this?
Yeah, so this is significant. 81% of Americans think the government should leave people free to follow their beliefs on marriage as they live their lives and run their businesses. It's a significant number, and I think it shows that many Americans just generally think there need to be limits on government intrusion and government meddling in their lives. The government's too large and powerful, and people don't want the government being the moral enforcer running around telling everyone how to behave morally. But that's what we're starting to see when you get into the situations where non-discrimination law conflicts with constitutional rights, and you have the wedding vendor case that comes up through the courts. You basically have a court system and a government backing up that system that's being the moral enforcer and telling someone, you have to believe this because we're not going to accept the fact that you have a conscience objection and don't want to participate in the celebration. And they can couch the terminology however they want in terms of, you have to treat everyone equally in the marketplace, et cetera, et cetera. But what it comes down to is, it's a moral enforcement of a moral norm on these wedding vendors. I mean, that's what we really have here. And because of that, it makes sense that you have 81% of Americans saying that government should stay out of this business. Regardless of how people feel about marriage specifically, they especially don't like the government meddling and intruding into how people operate in their personal lives.
Well, and the rubber is really meeting the road on that issue. I know that just days before FRC released the poll, Aaron and Melissa Klein, who have owned a bakery in Oregon, were told by the state that they face fines up to $150,000 for declining to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding. Now, this is just one example of a growing number of examples across the country where individuals, especially those who have businesses closely related to the wedding industry, are being forced to confront this issue directly. Tell us about the case with the Kleins and what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically a situation like that which I just described involving a state non-discrimination law saying, you know, there shall be no discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. And you have a bakery who's approached by a couple that wants services for their same-sex wedding, and yet the, you know, the wedding process, the provision of services is intricately tied to the celebratory process and the creative process and the promotion of the message. I mean, there's a message being promoted there, and everyone involved in the wedding is part of that in some way. And, you know, that's what the clients objected to. They have nothing against serving same-sex couples in general. They just didn't want to be a part of promoting this message. And so they were taken to court. Now what we have is basically a judicial ruling order, you know, declaring that they violated the non-discrimination law. The exact amount of fines is yet to be determined, but this is, you know, basically ratcheting up the process on these dissenting bakery owners, and you know, this is going to go through the state court system, and we don't know what the clients are going to do exactly yet, but we'll see, you know, how the appeals process works out. But, you know, I mean, this is concerning because this is precisely the type of thing that 81% Americans disagree with, and it illustrates how we really need to respect differences of opinion and learn to live side by side with these differences and not be forcing everyone to approve of behavior against their conscience.
Absolutely. Well, and just another example, too, just a few weeks ago, a federal court ruled against Washington florist Baronell Stutzman, who refused to violate her religious beliefs by arranging flowers for a same-sex wedding, a similar kind of situation with the Kleins and others who, again, have businesses that are related to or provide services to individuals who are getting married. Now, you've written that the judge essentially elevated non-discrimination law above what we have known to be constitutionally protected free exercise and free speech rights. Explain, Travis, if you would, what happened with the Baronell Stutzman's case and why this should just continue to raise concerns and express the need for states to pass laws or to strengthen existing laws that ensure that religious liberties are protected.
So this is, again, is a case, you know, like those I described, where you have a wedding vendor being forced to violate her conscience by our legal system. And, you know, this is the type of case 81% of Americans say should not be decided as it was. It was decided according to principles that basically elevated non-discrimination law above constitutional law arguments. The judge rejected the argument that she was engaging in her free speech here. Judge rejected the free exercise argument under the federal free exercise clause, which does have some case law history, which, you know, is not solidly protective of free exercise rights, at least, you know, to the standard that's in the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act. I think this case is a great illustration for why state RFRAs are needed, or basically state laws that put strict scrutiny in as the standard for protecting free exercise rights and conscience rights. There was no state RFRA at play here. The strict scrutiny standard did not apply to the pre-exercise claim, and he basically easily found it easy to dismiss that claim. This is precisely where, you know, Baronell could appeal to a state RFRA, and people like her could appeal to a state RFRA, and it shows the need for state RFRAs in the face of those who claim there's no need for them. It also shows that, you know, accuracy is needed when describing these laws. The law would be a defense in this case. It doesn't allow people like Baronell or anyone, you know, in that situation to just turn away anyone they want at the door, go around discriminating as they wish. That's not true. It allows them to exert a religious belief and claim of conscience that can't be substantially burdened by the government. The government can still burden it if it can show a compelling interest through the least restrictive means. So Baronell could have asserted a state RFRA claim if there had been a law on the books here, state RFRA in Washington. We don't know how the judge would have ruled, and may have still ruled against her, but she at least would have had that protection. You know, and this is a great illustration for why state RFRAs are needed, both in Washington and elsewhere.
Absolutely. Well, Travis, I've heard some well-meaning Christians respond to cases like this by sort of shrugging their shoulders and saying, what's the big deal? Just make the cake or arrange the flowers or whatever the situation may be. Allow that same-sex couple to stay at your bed and breakfast, you know, to capture their ceremony by photographing it, those types of things. What is the danger to people of faith of not being free to live out their lives according to their religious beliefs? Beliefs, particularly as it relates to the issue of marriage?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the danger is that we're going to suffer as a democracy. We're going to have, you know, these differences just marginalized, dismissed, and you know, kind of wiped off the table as having no value. We're going to have this moral enforcing conformity apparatus that tells everyone they have to believe the same thing. And then the diversity, which causes us to be a beautiful country, is wiped out. The point about what's shrugging shoulders and kind of what's the point, it just shows an inability of people to respect and uphold differences of view that they may not hold, or that, you know, or involving a situation that hasn't hit them personally yet. But this is a problem because our whole system is based on respecting and holding rights for others, even if we don't personally agree with their views. You know, even if I may choose to serve a cake to and be a part of the same-sex wedding celebration, I should respect the conscience rights of people who don't, and shouldn't tell them they're wrong. That's their conscience rights. I don't go around telling tourists other religions their conscience against eating certain foods or being part of certain ceremonies somehow wrong. That's their belief. That's the whole point of a sincere religious belief. And the real danger here is that people are unengaged with something that hasn't come to hit them personally but will at some point, and they don't respect differences in belief that they don't hold. And, you know, if they don't do that, then their beliefs ultimately will not have the framework and respect, legal protection they need when they're somehow threatened, because they will not have promoted and helped a system which respects those individual beliefs regardless of whether we agree with them personally.
Well, Travis, as we kind of wrap up our discussion here, and for the benefit of our listeners, from your perspective, how important is it for individuals and business people to really to take a stand, to not stay silent in every aspect of their lives?
Yeah, and I think it's very important. It's important to do this firmly, yet respectfully, and just say, you know, I'm not doing this out of hate, but this is my belief, and I'm not going to back down from it. And, you know, you can try to intimidate and yell at me all you want, but that's not going to change my beliefs, which are internally held. And, you know, it's important for people to do this because it sets a precedent. It gives momentum to the idea that we need to fight for our rights, which is true. And people need to do this on a wide scale. As I mentioned, it needs to be done firmly and respectfully in love, and it can be done that way. And, you know, I think accuracy is also very important here, too. The other side may try to smear religious freedom laws as license to discriminate or something like that. And if you understand how law works, you know that's not true. And that's why truth and accuracy is just so important. People need to understand that this allows people to, that these laws permit people to make a claim in court and test the government's interest in burdening the faith. It doesn't automatically say they're going to win, though. But it does allow them that right to test the government's burdening in court. And I think we should want that in the face of the government, which always wants to grow. These laws are something that anyone interested in individual freedom, regardless of their specific beliefs, should be supporting.
Well, and I think it's so important for our listeners to understand that they are not alone. It's so important for folks to know that if they do step out, if they do take a stand, that they're not alone, that the vast majority of our culture is standing right there with them. Travis, as people are interested in getting information about the poll, where can they go to get that and also to learn more about the Family Research Council?
Go to our website, frc.org. The poll is in a news release that we recently put out. So you can go to the newsroom tab on the site and click on press releases so people can find that there. And elsewhere on our website, you can find information about the different areas in which we're engaged.
Travis Weber, I want to thank you so much for being with us again on Family Policy Matters, for your great work at the Family Research Council, and just for the stand that you take in support of marriage, religious liberty, life, and all that you do at FRC.
Thanks very much. I appreciate being on with you.
Family. Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.